Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Cavaliers exact a little bit of revenge against the Boston Celtics on Sunday after facing their first real dose of adversity this season. Spence and I recap that, what was said afterwards, what lies ahead for this Cleveland Cavaliers team in terms of the schedule, and some notable injury notes as well. All that and more coming your way on the latest episode of Courtside with the Cavaliers on SI. It is Courtside with the Cavaliers, or Courtside with the Cavs, I should say, on SI. Spencer German, Spencer Davies, alongside with you as we take a look back at what was a little bit of a trying week for the Cavs in terms of actually facing some adversity in the loss column, and sort of look back just, I think, at Thanksgiving week and weekend as a whole and what kind of transpired for this Cavaliers team. They were also with that along those lines eliminated from the in-season tournament. I don't know how many people actually cared about that, but we can touch on that a little bit as well. But I just want to start by sharing my disappointment that Spence wouldn't give us what we all wanted, which was just an admission that the win over the Celtics on Sunday was a signature win for the season. Spence, you let us all down, man. You ended Thanksgiving weekend on the worst sort of note. Like, we all wanted some positive vibes to start a new week, and you just let us down.
I brought some positive vibes, but I was also being played off by the music in the background and the event people kicking us off the floor because they had to change it. But yeah, no, I was not going there. You know why. I explained why on the post-game show. I'm sure that we'll get into it if we break down a little bit of the Celtics game on this pod. But not going there. Not going there, Spence. Sorry. Cavs Frog's got to be outside, too. She's not even invited inside on certain nights, apparently.
That was the game she should have been there. Like, you know what? Now that you say it, you have a point. If Cavs Frog wasn't there, it can't be a signature win. She only shows up for the games that are going to be the big moment. Like, you would think she'd be there for the biggest moments, and beating the Celtics should have been a big moment. So the fact that she wasn't there tells me maybe it wasn't as big of a win that I'm making it out to be. But I do think, Spence, that is the measuring stick, right? And I understand you're going to look at this game and say, like, well, Boston was missing two key players. Cavs are missing a couple guys too. And, you know, to be down 14 at one point in that game, that was the largest lead Boston built. To be down 12 with about, I think, math on this, like 7:30 to go in the fourth quarter and find a way to rally to win. I thought that was pretty telling about this Cavaliers team, how there's no quitting them. But Kenny Atkinson has talked about that a ton this year. And again, even shorthanded, and even against the shorthanded Celtics team, they're still a really, really good team. You still got Jason Tatum to worry about. You had Kristaps Porzingis back in the lineup this time around. Like, they're still a tough team to beat. And you went toe-to-toe with them and mounted a big comeback, and you were able to get the job done. So I do think on some level, signature win or not, you walk away from this one as viewing this game as kind of a momentum builder. And you know, this can sort of be something that springboards you into, as we're going to get into a little bit later, a tougher portion of your schedule that's coming up, I think, as well.
And you look at what Donovan Mitchell did, first off, the mentality that he's carried all season long, the mentality really he's carried since he got here in Cleveland, is just that even-keeled, cool as ice. You know, this is a guy that even if he's not making his shots, he's playing defense, he's getting rebounds, playmaking for his teammates. This is one of those nights where it finally came to him in the second half after a few games where he was just off. His shots weren't falling, and they were good looks, the generated opportunities that the Cavs are used to getting. And I know a lot of people, you know, talk about over-reliance on Donovan Mitchell, but we addressed this last night. It's good to have that in the back pocket if things aren't going your way. And, I mean, Don was hitting the pull-ups. He was getting inside and finishing through traffic, just doing a lot of great things. Made the play to Isaac Okoro, who found Evan Mobley for the smash there at the end. That was an initial Donovan pass after he got doubled up top. So all of those things just kind of went Donovan's way once he, and I didn't want to say flip a switch because he was getting good looks, once those shots just started falling down. And, you know, that, I think, helps show the resolve of this team, but also in its leader and how it trickles down to the rest of the locker room. But there are some strategical things that I would love to address once we get deeper into this.
Yeah, I real quick, because I do think, and again, was something we talked about in the post game, if you guys want to go back and find it as well. But the fact that you had, you know, Kenny Atkinson has talked a lot this year about how they want to win and how the offense that you saw for that, you know, the 15 game, the 15-0 starts of the season and everything they were doing, sharing the ball, a lot of ball movement, getting guys easier shots, open looks, and that being sort of the focal point of the offense. That is what they, that is how the Cavs want to beat you. That is how Kenny Atkinson wants to attack teams and beat them. But to your point, the reason you pay somebody like Donovan Mitchell, the reason you want him here with this franchise moving forward and you gave him the extension you gave him is because in some of these moments against a team like the Celtics, you know, again, when you're in a seven-game series potentially against them down the line here, you want to know that you have that guy that can take over in crunch time. And that is, as much as the NBA has changed in terms of, yeah, you know, like it, you need wing players of a certain sort of height and weight and ability, right? And you know, there's certain players that can dominate games and there's certain strategies to kind of combat that. And the Warriors, I think, changed the game in terms of like three-point shots matter now more than ever, right? Like there's different things that have evolved. But one thing that has not evolved or that has stayed the same is that when you have a star player, when you have a dominant player like Donovan Mitchell is, that guy is just, it's a luxury. Like it's something that all every team doesn't necessarily have. And it allows you to know that you have a shot in almost any game you play because you have that guy on the floor who can at any moment take matters into his own hands and go off. And we obviously have seen, we saw that a ton here in Cleveland with LeBron. We knew that he single-handedly won the Cavs a bunch of games throughout his time in Cleveland. And he still kind of is doing that and every now and then he has that ability as a player. And Donovan Mitchell, maybe not quite the level of LeBron. We're not comparing him to Jordan, obviously, but like still one of the superstar players in this league. And so, yeah, I can't overemphasize like on a weekend where we're all talking about things that we're thankful for and we're celebrating with family, all these different things. I'm sure Cavaliers fans feel pretty damn thankful to have somebody like Donovan Mitchell that at a moment's notice can put the team on his back, Greg Jennings style, and win you the game.
He put the team on his back, though. But
he put the team on his back, though.
A couple of notes on Donovan. I think it was his fifth career 20-point fourth quarter. And also with three-pointers. He's hit 500 three-pointers now in a Cavaliers uniform.
He's
already chasing down LeBron, which there's a little bit more to go
chasing down if you mean he's still like 500 plus away. But yes,
yeah. He made a joke about that. If you go to our YouTube channel or if you're watching on our YouTube channel, you should watch his press conference. He joked about that. He's like, just got to, you know, do this and do however many more numbers to catch up to LeBron. But no, real talk. I mean, he's just been the standard bearer. He's been the character that the Cavaliers thought he was. And, you know, he just has this innate sense of leadership and knowing when to take over, too. That was, I think, another thing in that press conference that really spoke out to me. I think it was Jason Lloyd that asked him, like, how do you know? Like what actually brings it out in you to know that, all right, my team needs to pick it up? And he's like, you saw a couple turnovers. You know, George, you know, bounced the ball off of his knee. I got my shot blocked. I heard Jason Tatum say something, not directly to me, but something that told me that he was confident and that his team was gaining confidence. And, you know, you're down 12, 14 points. That's when he did it. And then he's like, and then the important thing is even when you do take over, to not force it. It has to be within the flow of the game. It has to make sense. And Kenny Atkinson even pointed that out too, how it all came in the flow. It was in transition. It was, you know, whenever you had any kind of advantage on the other end, or when you had a mismatch that you liked and you wanted Donovan to drive, or it was a catch shoot opportunity created by a screen, or it was just one of those matchups where you knew that Donovan was feeling hot and he just ripped off a string of, you know, two, three pointers, and then it was go time. So that I think is such, like you said, a luxury for this team to have. And not every team has somebody like that. And that has to definitely be appreciated if you're here.
Another thing I want to point out, because in the two losses to the Hawks, it was notable that they were clearly prioritizing getting Darius Garland in the switches on some of their bigger wing players and sort of taking advantage of that being a weakness, or they considered it a weakness, right? The Celtics followed that same script. They were we saw like 16, 17 seconds on the shot clock. They were trying to, they were getting Jason Tatum in position, screened open to get onto to Darius and then go to work and do his thing. And it makes sense. Like, you get a smaller guard on a wing player like that, one-on-one. Yeah, advantage to the team that does it. So I understand why they're doing it. I thought that Darius, though, I thought what he had to say after the game was pretty profound in that, you know, he made it, he flat out said, like, he sort of sent a warning to other teams. Like, hey, yeah, you can do that, but I'm not a punk. Like, I'm not just going to stand there and, like, let you, like, back me down without, like, trying to D you up. And Kenny Atkinson talked a little bit about how they can help him. Darius talked about how the thing that gives him confidence is, you know, he knows probably sometimes he's not going to win that battle every single time, but great guys defending the rim and Evan Mobley and Jared Allen usually out there with him. And that allows him, like, if he makes a mistake, they can kind of cover up for it a little bit. Like, he knows he has some help behind, and that's huge. I did think, like, even in the vein of understanding, like, I think his defensive rating for the game was like 122, which obviously is not very good. And part of that is, like, Jason Tatum's a great player. He had 17 points in that third quarter. He started going off, and some of that was still when those switches were happening. And sometimes it's just going to happen. Like, Tatum's going to hit his shots. But late in the game, Darius made some plays. Like, he forced some tough shots, and it led to, there was a sequence where, you know, the Celtics had like four or five misses in a row, and that was largely because Darius didn't quit, and he kept sort of fighting through that. So I understand it's a mismatch, and teams are going to keep using that to their advantage, but at the same time, like, the confidence that Darius is sort of exuding in his post-game conversation there, I thought was telling. That Kenny Atkinson is putting his trust in him. He said, we're not going to hide from it. Like, we're not going to hide Darius anymore. We're going to let him go out and play. Like, that tells you that they feel comfortable leaving him out there. And, you know, he's going to keep working at it. And I think that's an important thing to know going forward, because we know that's what teams are going to try to exploit with this team.
No doubt. And I have my theories on this. So, one, you knew that Boston wanted to get Darius into everything. Yeah. It was Peyton Pritchard dragging him into the action, Sam Hauser, whoever they had Darius guarding. They were coming up top on the screen and saying, okay, you're getting switched on to Jason Tatum, or you're getting switched on whoever the ball handler is at this time. I think Kenny wanted him to switch early the way he did because he wanted him to prove himself. I think he wanted Darius to see what would happen in the playoffs and be prepared for it. This is not going to be the primary strategy for Cleveland in the postseason. That would probably not be advantageous to have a guy who's 6'8 against a guy who's 6'1, 6'2 going down into the paint and being out-muscled and stuff like that. This, I think, was a test. I think this was a little bit of a, okay, I trust you can play defense, but what happens when? And then, you know, in this case, too, it worked into the strategy of Kenny not wanting Jason Tatum to get to that step back on his left side, because that three-pointer is extremely dangerous. They didn't want Tatum shooting threes, and they didn't want Porzingis shooting threes. So what did they do? They put smaller defenders on him. They brought him inside and said, okay, beat us with the two-point shot. Beat us with the mid-range. Beat us inside in the paint, whatever it has to be. But you ain't going to beat us with that three-point ball. And Darius was up to the challenge to body up Tatum, but Tatum, like you said, went off in the third. Yeah, there were a couple times where he used the off arm. Yeah, there were a couple times where he got to the line and it wasn't exactly the best foul call. But at the same time, you're going to not get those calls when you're going against someone with that big of a size advantage.
Yeah.
Tatum was shooting over the top. He was making shots on Darius Garland. But what spoke to me in the press conference with Donovan Mitchell saying, yeah, he's probably going to hit some shots over you. Yeah, he's probably going to get to the rim and get inside and get those easier looks. But at least he knows you're there. At least he knows that you're making him beat you. And I think that, for Darius, shows that kind of love and that trust in the locker room that, yeah, if there's somebody out there that's bigger than you and stronger than you, at least you're up there bodying him up. You're there. You're trying to stay stout. You know, you've got your 15 to 20 pounds back that you lost last season after the jaw was wired shut, and that happened. Like, he was there. He was even on Kristaps Porzingis at the nail, where maybe there should have been a foul called. But, like, these are things that I think are going to help Darius in the long run if that situation happens. It doesn't have to be the primary strategy, but when it does, then you can be ready for it. And again, I think in the Boston game particularly, Kenny did not want KP and Jason to beat them from the outside. So, hey, come on in, beat us with the twos, and then we'll live with it.
I think I like your theory. And now I'm sort of, my mind is wandering on, like, you know, gamesmanship type stuff, right? Where maybe this is Kenny's way of being like, listen, in the regular season, we're going to show him one thing. We're going to let you just kind of be stuck in the action, prove yourself, like you said, because there will be times in the postseason where they can't help every single time, and he will get stuck in some of those situations. So yeah, it is a good experience for him, but also, like, not giving anything away, right? Like, so that you still have things in your back pocket that you can deploy, different looks that the Celtics, when they study your tape, if you get to a series against them, they can be like, oh, we haven't seen him do this yet, and maybe that helps you get a game. So I like where your head's at with that. I think it might actually be like a brilliant idea, because, I mean, you, me, and our good buddy Mikey, we were all sitting there, and we were like, why? It's so early in the shot clock, and they're
literally
not,
22, 20, yeah. 21 seconds on the shot clock. Drag him up there, and then, boom, he's on him.
Isaac wasn't even trying to, like, fight through the screen. It was just like, okay, I'll take Pritchard, or I'll take, you know, Hauser, and you, good luck to you, Daria. And so we kind of wondered why it was, like, why they were letting it happen. But yeah, like, I like where you're, this is why Spence is the analytical eye of this team, because, you know, he thinks ahead in sort of like that galaxy brain perspective on what all this kind of means down the road. And I think that's fascinating. I think that's a good point by you to mention, like, why that was maybe happening in this setting in a December 1st ball game.
Yeah, no, it's a teachable moment, I think, is what he's looking for.
And I'll, real quick, I don't mean to cut you off.
I didn't really have much else to add.
Oh, no, you're okay. I was just going to say, I think we've seen Kenny do that a number of times this season too. Whether it's just like throwing a lineup out there and trying something, like he's trying to put guys in spots where, like, they can kind of learn and get comfortable. I mean, the fact that Jalen Tyson's minutes are up all of a sudden with these guys that are hurt, like, that's a teachable moment. Like, he's going to make mistakes. Things aren't always going to go his way. And I've seen him coaching Jalen from the bench when he's out there and kind of talking through some things. He's trying to get those things out of the way now so that if they get in a playoff game and that person needs to play, or you need to show something that you've practiced or done in a game, it leads to obviously the success in a longer series. So I think that is part of the brilliance of Kenny Atkinson, at least to start this season.
Yeah, and then if we can stick on the defense, like, okay, so Darius gets switched on early to the bigger guys. Maybe this is also an adjustment for Kenny, because he's seen Evan and J.A., who he's spoke so highly of, an ability to switch and play in defense and space. I think that maybe that's a little bit more advantageous if Darius does get beat to have your rim protector still in there than for your rim protector that's on the switch to get beat and then you have no answer inside, because that's what the Hawks really killed the Cavs on. A lot of the back cuts, a lot of the dribble drives, you know, Jalen Johnson, DeAndre Hunter, whoever it was, you know, Clint Capella on the alley-oops, same thing with Onyeka Okongwu. Those were really hurting you because you didn't have much size in the paint if Evan Mobley was out there on the perimeter guarding the threes and the fours. So maybe this was also an adjustment on his part. But again, I think for the Boston matchups specifically, I think he did that to help Darius and to kind of use it as a learning lesson. And also, all of these sides are factors in believing in your own guy, changing up a strategy, and also using it to kind of teach in the same time. So, you know, that's like three things in one setting, which is huge for Kenny to do that. One, to show his kind of expertise as a coach and how to develop guys, but also just getting your team to buy in and believe. And I mean, it's the perfect storm with this guy right now. He has so many different methods and ways. And if you listen to him talk after the games, it's so fun to hear. Like how, like you said, he's so genuine and he's so authentic.
Yeah, he's very candid. Very, very candid. I mean, he even flat out said that inbound play when Evan lobbed it up to Niang was garbage. Like, he straight up called it garbage.
Oh yeah, that was garbage.
It was like you were me talking about after the game. Like, yeah, that was a garbage play. But the coach said it. Like, it was crazy.
No doubt.
And, you know, it's not him taking a shot at Evan. It was just like, yeah, that wasn't a very good set and it didn't work out for us. Or it worked out for you, but like, it wasn't what we necessarily want in terms of a situation. So yeah, like I appreciate that. And I think like, I feel like I'm learning things from him because the way he talks about basketball after the game, which is huge.
Zaxby's just out Philly the Philly again. The Zaxby's Chicken Philly is back with garlic aioli, sauteed peppers and onions, decadent melty cheese, and your choice of Zaxby's signature crispy chicken fingers or delicious grilled chicken. But it's only back for a limited time, so enjoy it while you can. No pressure. It's just the greatest sandwich of all time on a ticking clock. Order the Chicken Philly today. Who's got the sauce? Zaxby's.
With that said, though, the win over the Celtics obviously bookends or you know, puts the bow on a now notable and I would say largely feeling good weekend for the Cavaliers, because you come away with a win against that team. It's always going to make you feel good. But we know like the two games before that against the Hawks were not quite as what you were looking for. The Friday loss eliminated them, obviously, from competing for the in-season tournament, which I don't know how many Cavs fans were even like really tied to that, feeling like they needed to do that. But it would have been kind of a cool thing, given how they started, to see them, I think, like participate in and at least get to the group stage where you're playing, you know, the tournament style games. But, you know, what did you take two games and really the first round of adversity that this team has faced in terms of like what went wrong, you know, some weaknesses or some areas of concern for this team? And on top of that, like, what did you take away from how they responded to finish the week in the way they did with the win over Boston? Because that was the thing we were waiting for, right? Spence was like, all right, things are going well and you're 15-0, and then yeah, you lose one, but you win the next two and you're 17-1, and it's like, man, everything's great. But what's going to happen when you hit that first losing streak? And to not let it go to a third game, I thought was massive for this team last night.
Well, I was also very curious what would happen when the Kenny Atkinson honeymoon phase was over. And, like, you know, if they
You know, it's funny you say that, because, like, during that game last night, I was kind of thinking about, like, that as a topic we were going to talk about post-game. Like, is the honeymoon stage over? And maybe it still is over, but I think, like, how they navigate that being over and not having like those immaculate vibes anymore and just being, you know, regular basketball, it's going to tell us a lot about like, okay, the, you know, how they're responding to Kenny even through as the season kind of continues.
And you kind of go back to that too. If you look at how they came back against the Celtics, they were down 14, similar to how they were down in the games versus Atlanta and, you know, both of those last ones. And then, you know, Donovan even went back to saying it was like game three when they faced Boston last playoffs. So like, that's kind of a growth, you know, mindset. But just going back to your point about the cup and the matchups with the Hawks, I just thought it was clear as day that Jalen Johnson and the bench unit were just had them figured out. They just knew how to beat them in transition. They knew how to beat them from the outside. A lot of size gave them problems because, you know, Darius was on a lot of those wings and was getting attacked immensely, but he just wasn't involved in every action like it was against Boston. I also think that, again, Evan being pulled out into the perimeter, if you beat Evan on the perimeter, then you have really nothing behind you unless Jared Allen's in the game and the core four's in the game, you know, then you really don't have much rim protection. So you have to be on your P's and Q's about strong closeouts, the closeouts that are disciplined, that you're not over aggressive on them, and also knowing your spots defensively. And I mean, once you get guys in rotation, it's really hard to stop. It's basketball. But I think that really – they were drawing two to the ball when Trey was driving. And then that just kind of set them up for failure. I mean, Reece Sache looked good in two games. I thought that DeAndre Hunter was the MVP of that two-game series, if you want to call it that, for the Hawks. I thought that Jalen Johnson was amazing. Shout out to Jalen, by the way. Thank you for the interview. Did that on rg.org if you want to check that out. But no, the problem was the second unit not being able to keep up with Atlanta's bench. And that was, I think, the real telling sign. And, you know, everyone would have made it get into a narrative and talking about the wings and how the Cavs need wings. They do. It would be nice to have a guy that's 6'8", 6'9", but I think too much might be made of it sometimes, because you look at some of these scores and it's not like the Cavs are getting blown to smithereens when this stuff happens. It's, you know, end of game stuff, and it's, I know the Hawks games weren't pretty, but at least they were defensively a little bit better in Atlanta. The first game with Atlanta was just not acceptable, and you heard that in the post game when we're in the locker room and Donovan just said, yeah, they kicked our butts. So again, going back to the authenticity on that, but I just thought it was Jalen Johnson in the twos that really beat him, and then Trae Young had a 20 assist game, a career high best game in the first one, and then came back and had another solid one in Atlanta. And that was just, sometimes coaches get out coached and players get out played, and it happens in the NBA. And they picked up, they came back Sunday, faced one of the top teams in the league, and they beat them. So, I mean, if you want to make any kind of long-standing conclusions because of a two-game losing streak to an Atlanta team, who also, by the way, beat the Celtics in Boston without Trae Young, be my guest. I'm not there.
So, I think that's all well said. And, you know, we talk about learning experiences. That's kind of been a theme of this I think, this episode in general. You know, the two-game skid, you play a team back-to-back like that, and they certainly figured some things out. Their bench was really good, like you mentioned.
Had their number.
Yeah, they had their number, and it was a chance to kind of rally and learn from it, and they did that with the win on Sunday. And I'm going to throw this up here real quick, because our loyal listener, Oren Smith, who I always see in the comments, he said, Cup is overrated. He also said, the ugly courts suck. I know people – it's funny, because I appreciate that the NBA is trying to do something different with the courts for the Cup to make it stand out, like, all right, this is different. But, like, dude, some of the floors are okay. Like, some of the floors I can live with. I think even the Cavs floor, like, isn't that bad. But the Hawks floor – dude, that was brutal on the eyes on Friday, seeing that court. It was terrible. It was bright yellow. It was like in your face. The yellow courts just don't work. Like, the Lakers did a bright yellow court last year. It was awful as well. I don't know. Something about the yellow, just they got to find a different way to make these courts stand out, I think, than just like making it like one solid color that is just like it burns through your retinas through the television.
On Black Friday, just hearing Brad Doherty complain about that throughout the entire game, I was laughing so hard.
Everybody hates the courts.
I was working it for the FanDuel Network, and I just kept hearing it. I was like, man, these are god awful. Like, it's just so fun. Just so funny hearing that. Yeah, no, I'm not a fan of a lot of the courts. I'm gonna blame the courts.
I'm gonna blame the courts and the Cavs getting.
I like the charcoal ones.
The charcoal ones aren't bad. Like, they're more subdued. I'm just going to blame the reason they didn't make the like bracket part of the tournament is because of the courts. I'm going to say even the players, like we always hear, like, you know, sometimes when you play in a certain arena and then you go to a different arena and it's like the airspace is just different or the feel is different. Your shot gets kind of thrown off. I think it's the same thing. The players were out there. These courts were hideous. And it was messing with their psyches as they tried to shoot the ball. So
bad uniform combinations, yeah. Everything, you know, it just,
that's my story and I'm sticking to it, at least for why they didn't make it further in the Cup. But no, we talk about schedule and, you know, there's kind of no rest for the weary here for the Cavaliers, because we know they obviously have some tough matchups on the horizon here.
Not Tuesday.
As they roll after this. You don't think they do?
Not Tuesday.
Well, not Tuesday, but I'm saying after Tuesday, yeah, okay. You get the Nuggets, the Hornets, who are they're not a great team, but you know, obviously they.
Oh, the Hornets are fun. No, the Hornets are fun. They're tough.
And Ball makes them a really tough opponent.
Yep.
And then I'm gonna be honest, like the one that I'm looking at, and I understand the Heat aren't having like a normal Heat season, right? And they're maybe sort of taking a backseat of late. Their team's getting a little bit older. Jimmy Butler's getting a little bit older. And they're almost, it feels like, in sort of like a transitional phase. But that Heat team has been such a bugaboo for the Cavs over the years that, like, I'm kind of looking at that one. Like, I know I joke about the statement win thing, but, like, because that – you know what it's kind of like? It's kind of like Michigan being in Ryan Day's head. I'm not saying that that Miami is in Kenny Atkinson's head, but it has been tough for this organization to beat that Heat franchise over the years. I mean, even just last year, in a really good Cavs season, they lost 3 of 4 to the Heat. So, again, I'm not saying it's going to be a statement win. I'm not going there with the Heat because the Heat aren't a very good team this year, I don't think. But there is something I think that comes with potentially playing that team, being able to beat that team. Just what do you make of that matchup, and what do you make up of kind of the tough stretch of schedule in terms of, I guess not every matchup, but the Bucks are after that Heat game, obviously. And then we know they're going to play December 10th, but we don't know who yet. So there's some games that start to kind of get figured out here. But the month of December certainly has some tougher opponents sort of on the schedule here as again, they just kind of got through their first round of adversity. And, you know, it's kind of no rest for the weary. They play the Nuggets twice in December. They got a road trip out west that sort of leads into the new year with the Nuggets, the Warriors, the Lakers, the Mavs all included in it. So, yeah, like this upcoming stretch of schedule is going to sort of test this team a little bit.
I'm glad you brought up December 10th because that was through the amazing work that we do here at Cavs on SI, just with the research and looking up events.
You went to the Cavs website and saw all the events.
And you saw TBD, and I'm like, well, they will be playing a home game on December 10th because they're obviously not going to Las Vegas. The stretch coming up after Tuesday. I'm sorry, I cannot stress this enough. I mean, you can't ever take a team lightly. I get that, but the Wizards are just in a whole... They're in a whole different league right now.
So
they're
19-1 or 19-3 is what you're saying.
I would be very, 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 very surprised. Very surprised, Spence. And you know me. I'm usually the guy that's like, whoa, pump the brakes. no, this Washington team it's just hard. It's hard to watch. And I love me some Bilal Coulibaly. It's very fun to watch. I like him. You know, but Jordan Poole and Kyle Kuzma, that shot selection is just, I don't know. But looking forward, moving forward after that, Nuggets, always going to be a tough matchup. You don't know which you're going to get, though, because are they going to defend? If they defend, they're really tough to beat. Their second unit and their team in general has gotten younger, relying a lot more on Christian Brown and Peyton Watson off the bench. You know, we've seen a lot of Julian Strother coming off the bench for them, too. We know what's going to happen with Jamal Murray and Nikola Jokic. Michael Porter Jr. has been a better playmaker this year. Aaron Gordon is a stud defensively, and you know what he's able to bring on the athleticism and in the open floor. So that's always a tough matchup. Can't wait for that one Thursday. Should be very fun. I'll bring in your attention to this. So the Hornets, like I said, very, very athletic, very fast. We know how dominant LaMelo Ball has been this year offensively. I love Brandon Miller. I think Brandon Miller is one of those on-the-rise guys that you got to really pay attention to. All three levels he's scoring at right now, but just the excitement he brings to that team, I think it cannot be understated. They also have Musa Diabate, who's doing really well at the five position for them as a shot blocker, but also just rebounding the hell out of the ball. Been watching a lot of Charlotte this year. You look at Miami, you bring up how the Cavs typically have trouble there. There's no South Beach nightlife to come, though, because it's on a back-to-back. So they can't be the victim.
There's no, what do they call it? The South Beach flu?
They can't be victim of the South Beach flu. So they're coming in on a back-to-back. They've got Tyler Hero, who's playing his ass off this year. Bam Adebayo's on to a slow start.
Is that the greatest home court in the NBA, by the way, that they have the South Beach flu at their disposal? Because I feel like every team struggles with that.
So you just play guys that went out on the town the night before, I guess, maybe. But I mean, Bam's off to a slow start. Jimmy's been inconsistent, but he's still very good at the end of games. Like I said, Tyler Hero's been playing a really strong role for them. You know, Pelly Larson starting to get some minutes for them off the bench, who's a rookie that really, you know, gave a lot last year at Arizona. We'll see. I think that they can go 3-1 during the stretch. Is that accurate? Do you think that's all right? 3-1?
Who was the loss to? Who do you think the loss
to? It would be either Denver or Miami. One of the two.
Mm.
I could see.
So that's what I mean. Like even you get a little bit worried about Miami.
Well, it's not even that.
It's back to back though?
Possibly. And also I could see Denver sneaking away with a win too. Because last time they were in town, they ended up winning that game. So, Yeah, I would say 3-1 this week. Could go 4-0, but you definitely ain't losing that game Tuesday. I'm not hot take guy, but you got real problems if you lose to that team.
So if they lose to that team, is it a signature loss then?
That would be a signature loss. Yes, Spencer. Yes, that would absolutely be a signature loss.
We'll get Spence to admit that one at least. Final thing before we get out of here, guys, because we like to keep these between 30 to 40 minutes. We don't want to go crazy long with these podcast episodes. We do appreciate you guys jumping in as always. And obviously your commentary, which, by the way, B Skrills jumps in and says, the Wizards are butt juice. That's a great way to describe the Wizards, I think. You know what? And it's funny because just how Kenny Atkinson said that inbound play was garbage, he probably would also describe the Wizards as butt juice if you got him in like a moment alone where there's no cameras or microphones.
I don't know if Kenny would say butt juice.
Can we get Kenny Atkinson to say butt juice at some point this season? That's going to be the new goal. But Spence, I am kind of curious. We know the Cavs are sort of waiting here on Dean Wade returning, on Max Strus returning. What is kind of, there's not really they've been very vague about timelines, but like, how are you sort of envisioning this goes in terms of those two guys returning to this team? Is it a not till the new year type of thing with Max Strus? Is Dean Wade going to be out that long, you think? Again, they keep it very vague, but what is your kind of read on that situation before we get out of here?
Yeah, so on Max, I think it's January. The way that they've been describing it, he still hasn't had contact. He's going 1-on-0. We saw him sprinting around in practice. He's been shooting, but no contact. So the way that Kenny described it yesterday was progressing well, but like even a couple of days before that, he said he was a ways away. So, you know, he's not putting a date on it. That's telling me that the Cavs are going to bring him along slowly and make sure that he's, you know, 100%. And then in terms of Dean, that just kind of came out of nowhere. His left ankle got hurt and he still hasn't, you know, really gone through contact, but I'm assuming that Dean will be back, you know, sooner than Max would, if you had to ask me.
Real quick, and this is something I think we can dive into deeper on maybe the next episode of the podcast, but just kind of give me a surface level answer as to where Max Strus will fit into this rotation when he does come back. And again, we don't have to go in depth here with this one, but I think this is a conversation for down the line that will be really, 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 really fascinating. But just kind of on the surface, what does that look like when he's back in the rotation at some point this season?
Like a glove. He's just a little bit bulkier, a little bigger. We know how well Max made plays last year, especially off the catch and in the pick and rolls as a handler. So it just gives you another opportunity to have that, another opportunity at a catch shooter, somebody who can really get going, as we know, very, very much so streaky, but somebody who can really let it fly. Just a bigger guy than like a Sam Merrill, I guess. Like maybe that you'd be using him in some screening actions. I think defensively, he really held his own last year, was really aggressive because of what was behind him with J.A. and Evan. So, yeah, I think he fits in well, and he's just another – you could treat him like a wing. He's 6'5", you know, 6'5", get up there, and somebody you could play at the 3, sometimes the 4, even though he doesn't like playing the 4. But when, you know, the Cavs go smaller and, you know, you do the Evan Mobley and 4 guards lineup, maybe Max plays the 4 there. But he fits right in. And, I mean, you look at what Dean Wade brings to the table. We already know. When he's in there with Jay and Evan, how much of a defensive issue that causes for other teams. And it's almost nearly impossible to get deeper than, you know, 20 feet off the dribble drive. So, yeah, it's a good thing when they come back for sure. They've needed, you know, those types of players. And you know, we haven't seen Max yet this year. And I'm excited to see what happens when he gets back.
Yeah, it'll be interesting because it almost feel like, assuming he's back in January, like you're getting like a pre trade deadline addition, right? Like you're inserting a guy who can be a starter for you and that we know can obviously be a big contributor for this team at a perfect time. So I, you know, we'll continue to explore that as time goes on. You know, it sounds like he's still a ways away, but how Kenny utilizes him and works him into this rotation that's already been like 10, 11 guys deep will be something that I think everyone's paying attention to. All right, guys, that's going to do it for us on the latest episode of Courtside with the Cavs on SI. We encourage you, as always, to head on over to the Cavaliers on SI YouTube channel. You can find post-game press conferences from all the Cavs players that spoke yesterday at X-Win. Kenny Atkinson, of course. You can find Spence and I chopping it up after the game, just about with our live post-game reaction show there. You can also find all kinds of different content, more episodes of the podcast. And we also, in that vein, we want to encourage you to like, follow, subscribe, review the podcast wherever you get your podcasts, Apple, Spotify. Did I mention Apple? And, of course, at the Cleveland Cavaliers on SI YouTube channel. We like to boost up the Apple. There's this. I'll explain. I'm proud of you.
I'm just proud of you right now because you're doing the plugging this time, and you did not forget.
I'm trying to make it more of like our closeout here. So I'm getting better as time goes on. I'm like Darius Garland playing defense. Like you can switch it on me, but I'm gonna go at you. Like I'm not a punk. Okay, I'll get it figured out.
Can we also just talk about how brilliant this man is for coming up with the episode title for this? I mean, it's amazing.
I'll throw it up there so you guys can throw it up again. Be careful what you switch for instead of be careful what you, it's a play on words there. If you didn't know, yeah. Sometimes I'm good for some of those, you know, my titles sometimes hit. So, all right, guys, thank you so much. We'll be back. We'll have to see if we're going to do another episode later this week or if we'll just reconvene next Monday, but Spence and I will be back with more episodes of the podcast as will John and Tommy. Thanks again for watching as always. And keep on following along with all things Cleveland Cavaliers with the Cleveland Cavaliers on SI.
The NFL playoffs are better with FanDuel because right now new customers can bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets guaranteed. That's $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. FanDuel, an official sportsbook partner of the NFL. 21 plus and present in select states. First online real money wager only. $5 first deposit required. Bonus issued as non-withdrawable bonus bets which expire 7 days after receipt. Restrictions apply. See terms at sportsbook.fanduel.com. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
You're a startup founder. Finding product market fit is probably your number one priority. But to land bigger customers, you also need security compliance. Obtaining your SOC 2 or ISO 27001 certification can open those big doors. But they take time and energy, pulling you away from building and shipping. That's where Vanta comes in. Vanta is the all-in-one compliance solution helping startups get audit ready and build a strong security foundation quickly and painlessly. Vanta automates the manual security tasks that slow you down, helping you streamline your audit. The platform connects you with trusted experts to build your program, auditors to get you through audits quickly, and a marketplace for essentials like pen testing. So whether you're closing your first deal or gearing up for growth, Vanta makes compliance easy. Join over 8,000 companies, including Y Combinator and Techstar startups who trust Vanta. For a limited time, get $1,000 off Vanta at vanta.com/simplify. That's VANTA.com/simplify for $1,000 off.